Hello everyone, Ger Hoy here in the hot seat for Hopping the Ball, joined as usual by Pat Hickey. And this week, for a change folks, we want to do a profile of a man well known in the East Clare area, associated with both music and rugby. But so tonight we'll be talking about rugby. Garrod Devaney, you're very welcome.
Thanks very much, Ger.
Okay, Garrod. Pat and myself and Johnny and the lads, when we are talking around the table here, we often talk about rugby. We talk about international rugby a lot. We might mention Munster, and we always mention Scariff, but we never really have the full in-depth knowledge of what Scariff rugby is about. And personally, I don't, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners would appreciate a profile. But before we go into the Scariff situation, Garrod, maybe from your own perspective, you might just give us a background as to your own interest in rugby and where it developed from.
Yeah, sure, no bother. Just going back a while now, unfortunately. A bit too far for everyone's liking.
We won't ask how far.
Yeah, it's more than 20 years now, put it that way.
Yeah.
But sure, I suppose it happened really, tis my neighbour now, the great Tom Broderick, Eamon Nugent and Rob Madden. They were the main instigators of the club at the time. And we kind of got together and we were training a bit, and Eamon Nugent at the time, of course, there was no mobile phones or anything like that either, so it was a case he'd ring the house phone, and Eamon would pick me up at Peppers and we'd go train and come back and stuff like that. And I suppose we went down kind of, we started off, I suppose, as the case of the lads that were trying to hurl maybe and it wasn't getting on so great, and they might try another avenue for a huge success. So that's how that all started. And sure, we got going and we were kind of half illegal for a long time as well. We were playing a year or two above ourselves, or as well as that. But it was just a kind of great interest. And it was maybe 25, I suppose, of us, and dwindled down to maybe 15 or that towards the end of it. But to be fair, the majority of the lads that I started playing with are still involved in the club today, like, which is...
It's a testament to the lads and the club itself, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you know what it is? It's something that we never really think about, I suppose, until you get asked the question. But, you know, there's 8 or 9 of the lads that I played with now are part of the committee, and our actual president, Michael, was my own age in school. So we were on the same teams and all. So it's kind of, that's where it all started for us.
And just go back even a step further, as a young fella at home in Feakle at the time, Garrod, was your dad and mam involved in rugby or interested in it, or were you just picking it up from the radio?
No, to be honest, my mother hated it, to be honest. But she didn't really know about it until it was kind of too late. But it was hurling was our main thing in Feakle, to be fair, and that was always good to me as well, to be honest. But we started in rugby kind of when we were 15 or 16, so we were very late to it.
Compared to what maybe some young lads might be to know.
That's why I suppose when we took up the mantle then of doing a bit in the club, the ambition was to start lads a bit younger to give them a chance, because as we all know, it's a very physical sport, and you know, you kind of need to know what you're doing.
Of course. You need the skills, you need the whole lot, how to defend yourself, how to tackle and all
exactly,
that.
Okay.
And at the time, what competitions was available to the Scariff Club? Was it within the Munster area, or what way was it?
At underage, it was mostly friendlies, to be fair. We didn't really play much Munster competitions until I was kind of into adult rugby, I suppose. Because we were kind of the start of it again. It had kind of dwindled away. So my age at about 14 or 15 kind of started it up again. And in fairness, there has been a kind of a progression since then, but it's very hard for the club to keep lads going, particularly from 15, 16 to adult. There's just a lot going on, and there's a lot of different people in schools and different places and things, and from under 12 down we seem to be able to manage it pretty well, but there's just that gap there that even now we still can't get that right.
And I suppose maybe for a lot of sports it's kind of a difficult age group anyway to try and keep track of, Garrod, is it?
It is like, and we're lucky in one sense where we're not caught by the boundaries of parishes and stuff like that. You know, sometimes I feel I'm a bit like Pep Guardiola. I'm going around picking lads up whatever. it's all part of it at the end of the day, and there's nothing illegal about it. But you know, you have to do what you have to do, and you know, it's always been the case. Like, we've always had, even going back to when I was playing, like, we were always good to find a South African or a Kiwi or something somewhere and bring him in and get him a bit of work and things, and that sort of way. That's gone back like since the start of it, and thankfully we're kind of keeping that going a little bit.
Okay. And just as regards the progression along the way then, Garrod, in your own playing career, did you fall into management, or did you
I did kind of fell into it, I suppose. we were going through a troublesome period, I suppose, yeah. to call it that way. Like the interest was kind of dwindling, and I remember there was a couple of meetings had, and it was all going to go to pot if we didn't kind of put something together properly. And sure, I kind of just fell into that one, really. And I was lucky, I had a couple of lads with us around the place at the time.
Yeah.
Colin Burke was with me, and Nick Griswood.
Nick Griswood was at the time.
So, you know, that was... They kind of came in with me then, and we had a bit of success then. We had a couple of barren years there, and then in 2008, then we're still getting pints out of it, I suppose. This is the one we're looking at. We won the league and the cup in our junior two, which is what we were at the time.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we haven't lifted a cup since. But that was probably our greatest achievement as a senior club, to be honest.
Okay.
And there was some. Most of them lads, to be fair, or last of them, and even they were local anyway, are actually still involved. Yeah, so, you know,
And as regards the competition structures there for a club like Scarra, what's there, and what other teams do you compete in, and is there a couple of different competitions that you take part in each season?
Yeah, well, of course, things have evolved a lot since I was playing. I don't know whether the team are better or what, I don't know. But, like, now we're in a proper Munster Ren setup. Like, so, you know, we play in the Munster Junior 1, which is, we're in Division 3. It's full-on rugby. There's no, as I said, there's no room for error. There's no tiddlywinks of a scrum, a metre push, any of that kind of crack. It's full-on.
Same
rules that you play anywhere. And it's a tough competition, but it's where you kind of want to be because... You know, if we could get up a couple of divisions even more, I often say, like, there's very little in the difference between the middle of Division 1 and down as far as the middle of 3.
Okay.
There's very little in it. Okay. A small bit of organisation and maybe one or two key players is an awful lot into it. And you can even step that a bit further along the line. Like, I'm of the opinion as well that any team in Division 2C of the senior AIL would earn it to beat any team in Junior 1.
Okay.
Particularly in Leinster. You know, it's just the fact that only one or two come down a year and one or two go up, but the reality of it is, like, you know, a lot of 2C would be lucky to stay, to win a junior anywhere. That's the rules of the game. You have to play with it. But, like, it's just, you know, we're at the level where we need to be, but trying to push it on to the next level is kind of always the challenge, whether it is numbers or ability or, you know, organisation, maybe, you know, coaching. I have to put my own head in the ring as well for that. You know, it's a mix of everything.
Yeah. It's a course.
You know, this kind of brings you on.
And just as regards to coaching, Garrod, for yourself, what have you done? Is it through the Munster branch that coaching is organised?
To be fair, around the time when I started coaching, I suppose they came to us and said, like, lads, you have no qualified coach, like, on the system, like, you need to, if you, to play at this level, you have to have it. So I had to go through that process.
What did it entail?
Well, coaching courses, and I had the impression that the coaching course was going to be a lad sitting down telling us all where we're going wrong and started off with. But to my horror, when I went to Cork for this weekend, it was actually to do with. So we were lifting, it's a while ago, but we were lifting lads in lineouts. And when instead of telling a person about scrum technique, we were fired into the middle of it and said, hey, now that's what you do. But it was very good, like, you know, and I learned a lot from it, to be fair. And you try and bring a bit back. And to be fair to the Munster bench, and I don't like even out as well, but to be fair to them, they always give us opportunities to improve or, you know, get onto the next platform or try and play like they're trying to play.
And since you became kind of more involved with what Munster offer, has Munster branch itself become more professional and wide ranging in what it can offer to clubs like yourselves?
It is. Yeah. Now, I wouldn't be the most loved man in there now, to be honest.
Okay. Well, no, that's not a fault.
No. Well, I'm sure you know me now. If I have something to say, I'm going to say it.
Yeah.
And that doesn't work sometimes. But I say we have a good battle with them, but I think we're evening out as things go on. But, like, you know, my own agenda is rugby in this region, and I don't care. I won't let anybody. You know, to put it in terminology, maybe for the GA, maybe you might understand it better. We're probably the least from hurdlers of the rugby world, like, so. So we need to.
Yeah.
So you have to stand up for yourself, you know, to help yourself after that. Yeah. But I don't think I'll ever be getting a job in there. Put it that way.
Well, when myself and Pat and the lads are talking about rugby locally, we're looking at the likes of Declan Noonan and Henry Purcell. Do you know fellas who would be heading the head of each other hurling? And yes, they're coming together with you and Aaron Hogg and all.
Okay, yeah, that's
from Clonlara. So, you know, and looking at your team during, say, the last year, it was a very consistent group of players, I thought.
Yeah.
Looking at it that way, would that be correct, or were you chopping and changing a bit? Yeah.
We tried to chop and change a little bit, and maybe a little bit too much in some areas of the pitch, but we'd be very confident like that our pack is a reasonably strong pack for any division.
Okay.
And
okay.
They've held their own with it, no matter who they've played against, to be fair. And our backs, to be fair, we haven't given them enough for them.
Yeah.
To be honest. And when we lose one or two, it's a big problem for us. Yeah. Whereas we have a bit of cover up front.
Okay.
We're not sure to be glass.
No big glass.
No. Yeah. But like, it's just, if we got a couple of more in and we're looking at avenues this year, maybe getting in either a 9 or a 10, and he'd give a hand as well with the actual coaching part of it as well.
Yeah.
And just to see, will that drive us on to the next bit, because I think this is the missing piece for us to move forward, really, and we have to move forward. Like, that's there's no point staying where we are. Like,
okay, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I suppose Garrod, it doesn't help. You have a lot of dual players.
You have.
And Horland would probably be their number one, and they play the rugby when they're available. But if you were to progress it into competitions, it could interfere with the cup matches and stuff towards tail end of the rugby season, we'll say.
So and the season for yourselves, when does that actually start and finish?
It's over now, unfortunately. We should have been in the cup for our division, we'll say, but to cut a long story short, we got a walk over, which was very convenient, and it put us into another realm, and we actually beat Feathers above us, and then we went on to play Highfield, which was their first team are playing AL1B.
Yeah,
that's seven divisions, I think, between us. Like, but now, in fairness, they didn't bring their full team, but they brought a few because they knew they weren't going to walk out of Scarafendi. They won the game well, but at the same time, we could still be playing in competition in the cup. If we were in the cup, we probably should be in. The ambition at the start of the year, to be honest, and I don't think we even said this to the players, but it was to come third in the league, because we didn't think we were good enough to play Division 2 yet and to win a cup. But we weren't in the cup to win it, and we did come third in the league. From the club's point of view, they're very happy with where we're going. But where I was, I'm born to, I hate losing. Like, no matter what it'd be at.
I think that's a trait that's required at that level.
This won Division 3 this year.
They were phenomenal, Pat.
And they've gone up to Division 2, but is there much of a gap between Division 3 and 2?
No, for them, I'd be surprised if they don't give it a rattle. They won convincingly this year. The way I said it to everybody about tennis, the top five of us would compete with them forwards and backs, but at 9 and 10, they had us.
Yeah.
They had everyone
at
9 and 10, and that's critical. The guy that are playing at 9, maybe Eden Cochran was the hero.
He was.
This guy was always there, but probably never heard of him, but he's getting his opportunity now.
Yeah.
And I'd be surprised if he doesn't get moved on somewhere else again. But they were fantastic. They won, to be honest with you, and to put it on a record as well, what happened to them at the end of the season was awful. They won other games, but the last game was the game they were supposed to get the cup and the big presentation, and they were given a walkover.
That's a pity.
You know, that shouldn't happen. It shouldn't be lovely.
The club got a great boost with the two boys getting Munster senior contracts.
Massive.
Huge for Innes Rugby. But I want to put on record my admiration for you and all the guys like you that are doing savage work and have done savage work for Scariff Rugby. We always look out for Scariff Rugby results and that, but it's great to stick with it and persist with it through the lean times you were outlining there. It's not easy, and it's like everything else, there's a few people having to do a lot of things, and it's shown a fierce amount of dedication. And yes, I know you can pick players from various places, but at the same time, to gel them all together and keep going, and I think people enjoy playing with rugby. The few that I know play, they love it. And I think there's great credit due to you and the rest of the committee and all the people that are helping out at Scariff, and the fact that you've great facilities as well, which is a credit to you as well.
I agree, Pat. Looking at it from the complete outside, Garrod, I mean, obviously when you're internal in the club, you know all the issues. But looking at it from the outside, as Pat said, the facilities, what you're doing, getting the young lads involved, it's a very progressive system that we feel, looking at it from the outside, even though you could probably say, oh, jeez, we've had the problems internally, as every club would have, obviously.
No, it's a great... Look, thanks, first of all. But, we're not on our own. Like, as I said to you to start, like, there's the few of us that were playing together, you know, I'm not going to name anyone else because I left someone out.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There's a group there of maybe 10, 11 people that are, without them, the club wouldn't exist. Like, it's that simple. And I think we're lucky enough with the group of players that we put together this year in particular. I've said it to them this year, really, they're the closest I've ever had to the team that won in 2008 for their honesty. And, like, their effort was superb. You know, and there's something in them, all right. Like, and hopefully next year we can improve a little bit more. Get another one or two win will be the key to it.
And for yourself, Gerard, at this point now, looking forward to the autumn again, have you won? And don't name names, but would you have guys in mind around the East Clare area that you might have seen that might come in as a number 9 or 10 or whatever? You know, that you have to kind of persuade to get involved.
Yes.
Yeah, you have. Okay, all right.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Right, so if you see me at Junior B hurling matches, yeah, somewhere, you know there's something up.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. Excellent. Excellent. And just as regards the actual management of the club, what's entailed as regards keeping the show on the road? You said it's a committee maybe of 9 or 10. How often do they get together, Gerard? Or whatever kind of sub? Is there one or two detail to do with various tasks? How does that pan out?
Yeah, it is. To be honest, it is a fairly small kind of group, to be fair. But the work to do is Trojan. Like, to be fair to them, they laid me off with what happens in between the white lines. They kind of leave it to me, to be fair to them, and they always have. And everything that I want from them, I get back, no hassle. And, you know, a lot of their work is unseen, and, you know, they don't get any credit for it at all. And, like, you know, I think they should get credit a lot more. It's easy for me. I'll either get credit, as I often say to my lads, if we win, it's because you're brilliant, and if you lose, it's because I'm crap. But, like, at the same time, I'm in the spotlight, and I can either like it or not like it, but a lot of the work that they do is totally unseen, like gathering money and lots of own things like that. And, you know, it's that's what keeps the club going.
Looking for grants, talking to politicians, sports capital, all the
And I do, hands up, I do zero of that. But, like, the facilities, as you alluded to, are there because of those lads.
Absolutely.
You know, and it makes my job an awful lot simpler going around asking a lad to play when I know that I have decent support.
Of course, absolutely. And as regards during the season, would matches be every second weekend or every weekend to get out roughly?
It's kind of funny the way it works. Like, when the one thing about the rugby is you're guaranteed, like, there's a book of fixtures at the start of the year.
Yeah.
And there, someone is dead and they'd want to be very close to you. Like, the games go ahead.
Games go ahead, yeah.
There, you know, and so you kind of know at the start of the year where you're going. Like, there was 10 league games this year and there were bare an odd break for an international break or something like that. It was week in, week out.
Okay. And would the lads get a chance to train midweek or that? How did that head out?
We were very lucky this year. Tuesday night has been our Achilles heel for as long as I can remember.
Yeah.
Because we've lads in college and we've lads away. But fair play to them. I have to give them credit this year. We trained Tuesday and Fridays. And the Tuesday nights have been as good as the Fridays. And that's the difference between competing and not competing, to be honest.
Absolutely.
Because you can
work on things throughout the week.
You know, and in fairness to the lads, they put in a huge effort. Like, we were very lucky this year. We got a couple of lads in on school. They came over to the secondary school and they turned 18 in the middle of the year. But they were brilliant to have at training because it was another two bodies every Tuesday night. And they were great. Like, they were mighty lads. You know, so there's a good group there. Like, we're not a million miles away from, you know, like, the league table looks get, like, you've been in 48 points, like, and Castle Island were on 38 and we were on 28. But, like, it looks terrible, but 5 points is a win. Like,
that's right, you know, of course.
It's like a road, the Six Nations this year.
Yeah.
Eastleigh won 2 matches and drew one and finished second from bottom.
That's right.
And they'd be looking at the table. Jesus, how'd that happen? It's bonus points.
That's
stuff.
Right. That's right.
The under 20s for Ireland, the fact they didn't get the bonus point cost them the
title.
It did,
Peter.
You know, and they played fantastic rugby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in the whole country, rugby has grown. The amount of talent coming through the provincial system at young underage is huge for Ireland as well. And that's working its way down to the grassroots. And people are getting into the rugby. You know, the World Cup was on there autumn. Okay, it was devastating for Ireland, didn't win it. But the whole country was gripped with it.
Yeah.
And that helps people, you know, rugby. Now, they're tightening up the rules then as well and trying to protect players because, you know, you probably have come across some lads don't want, their parents don't want to play in rugby.
Yeah, no, for sure.
You know, because the potential injuries and all this kind of thing. But a lot of the youngsters, Gerard, that you'd have along, they'd be dual players, and would they opt out of rugby? Have you seen many yeah, that have opted out for good? Like,
there is a few, to be fair, and I have to say, there's a couple of lads, you know, that rightly so had to as well. You know, you get injured in whatever sport, and it's a big contact sport, and you know, if something happens, you're out. Like, that's it. Yeah. Like, you know, you're not going to do anything else to make yourself worse in any way. But we've been very lucky. To be fair, like this year, to be fair, we had two actually bad injuries. Ian Murray broke his ankle and leg in two places, actually, above in the field. It's something that I hope we never see again.
But
thankfully, he's on the mend, and our medical is just the best I think I've ever seen, to be honest.
Who have you on the medical?
Noel Fitzpatrick from Fiedler.
All right, yeah.
I couldn't say
lucky to have her.
Good things about her.
Yeah. No,
She's fantastic. The day I run out of the bottle of water and a bag of ice over. Just a simple thing, like we were down in Kerry in the early parts of the league, and they had no medic, which for a home team is borderline scandalous, to be honest. But one of their players physically dislocated his elbow on the pitch, and we could all see it. I was there going, oh Christ, 2 minutes, she had all things sorted.
Brilliant.
Do you know what I mean? And just the ease of that on the sideline alone for me,
nearly
worth six points in the board.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know, to know that players are
looked after.
If something does happen, you know, they're going to be looked after.
And you're right, a typical, for those of us that don't know much about what goes on in the background, what's a typical training session really? What is it?
Yeah, it depends, you see, because you're really, at the start of the year, it's based on kind of power and fitness. And as the season goes on, when you have, if you're after coming off 80 minutes of torture on a Sunday, the last thing you want to be doing is hitting bags of a Tuesday.
Yeah.
So you have to tailor it to suit what's after happening. And you try as well to tailor it maybe to go easy on some of the lads that are after putting in a big shift. And
yeah,
it is more about maintenance when the season kicks in rather than fitness.
And just going on what Pat said there, I say take you've got Ger High down from Kilnane who hadn't played rugby much. What would you do with him? Would you find a spot for him?
How would you decide who's a back and who's a forward? Yeah. Is it their physique or
tisn't a lot of it is the forwards, like, not to be disrespectful to anyone, but if you're on the bigger side you're going to get fired in there to start anyway to see how things go.
And
vice versa on the backs. But like I discovered a few times as well that a small lad with a chip in his shoulder inside the forwards can be very vital as well. You know, and we have one or two of them as well. But generally you kind of know, like, you know, hands are a lot to do with it as well. If you can, you know, and if you have hands, like you've a better chance in the backs than the forwards. But it's becoming a game though where it's very important now that the old kind of stereotypical game is dead nearly. You know, the forwards need to be able to pass the ball as good as the backs.
Yeah, I mean, Gerard, I had a little experience at rugby, believe it or not. we played community games rugby.
Oh yeah.
One time, Ted Harrington organised it when the primary school, and I happened to be captain of it. I think I was captain because I was the oldest. It was under 12.
Yeah.
But we only had the one match. We went up to Kilrush. And I think the whole team went up in Ted's car. But it was a short-lived career. The ball never crossed the halfway line except for the kickoffs after they scored. I think it ended up 45-0.
Yeah.
But we quickly gave it up.
Yeah.
We entered it for the crack, and we had a rugby ball all right, but just the training we did was limited. But it was an experience you wouldn't forget. We hadn't a clue.
Yeah, and I just go back and follow on maybe what Pat is saying there, Garo. The lads who are currently playing, what experience or what exposure to rugby would they have had prior to joining yourselves? Were they on underage teams? Had they done something in schools or anything?
There's a few, I suppose. The lads that would be under 23 or 4 would have some bit of rugby done. And we've tried another kind of a way in the club when we couldn't facilitate lads at 15 to 18 to play rugby. We've kind of encouraged them to go to town and go out to other clubs and help to facilitate that and get them to play in there. And other lads would have gone to school in rugby playing schools. They would have got decent exposure on that. And probably that combined with the experience lads that we have is the reason that we're probably improving and getting better. And these lads are driving the standards. Like, you know, none of my coaching team could sit here and take credit for anything, really. These lads are driving their own standards, like, and they want to be better, and they're encouraging us to be better. You know, and we're just kind of organising it. You know,
sure,
to be fair, even though certain songs like John Kelly, like, you don't, you know, without these lads, like, we have no club, like, you know, and it everything works together. And I think as a unit, we're starting to come together as a club better now than we have done, maybe. And but it takes time to build. Like, it was a case of we were at a low ebb at Junior 2, and we worked very hard to get to Junior 1, and we're kind of working very hard together now. But it looks like this club are in the right place, and we've good lads involved keeping the money going and keeping things working that way. So, like,
well, like myself and Pat was saying, from the outside, it looks progressive, chair, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so look, that's the way to keep it going. You know, and that even, I would imagine, if you set up a collection at a O'Malley's in Flagmont somewhere, and you probably would get money for people will be aware
that's
of
right.
it, like, you know. And I think that's the benefit of it, because a bit like Scariff Air Radio itself, Scariff Rugby is an East Clare establishment. So and I think that that's crucially important. Talking about younger guys, Donica McKenna.
Yes.
Tell me about Donica.
Donica is a great young lad. Sure, he's from Mighty Stock. Sure,
yeah,
he's
of course.
Mark McKenna and Christina Madden. So, like, I'm look at any day you get to represent your province at any level is savage, like, and but he's a great young lad. He's over on the field sure as long as any of us, like, since he was able to walk as well. So, like, you know, he's following in the footsteps of his sister.
His sister, that's right.
So, you know, it's great. Look, it's great for us as a club as well to have somebody.
And
to have
your
name, you know.
Has he gone to other clubs, or has he? What as well as which yourselves got on?
Yeah.
Has he gone for other coaching elsewhere?
We're kind of joined with kind of Kilu Bella. I was saying those are kind of the one. Now, you know, and we can say I'll be like this. We're not. We are.
Yeah.
You know, and without them in my team as well, you know, the six or seven of them guys coming over that are making it the same. And you know, there's people down there and there's people in Scariff that are of the same opinion, thankfully, that we're stronger together.
Okay.
And you know, you can achieve something if you pool the resources rather than trying to be, we can be knocking them aside of each other and doing our two for the rest of our lives, but that's no good.
But you know, it mirrors really what's happening underage in some of the hurling clubs, like, you know what I mean,
exactly.
Coming together and chill.
You know, and
yeah.
You know, it is good. But like, as regards, it's just great to have that, and it gives the rest of the lads then that are coming up behind these people the ambition to say, well, like, you know, I can do this, or this avenue is here. Because there's the one thing, I suppose, that was always kind of a bit more of mine was like this: how do you get noticed in Scariff, like, you know? And we're booking the trend in that a little bit now, which is great, and the more of it that we can get in, the better. You know, because
if we didn't go to one of the rugby player schools, or we played with a club that had a good structure, you may not be noticed at all, obviously. You know?
Well, like, sure, I had first-hand experience with myself with my own lad. Like, you know, in order for him to play rugby at the level he wanted to play, you know, we had to move school. Well, he moved school for non-rugby reasons, obviously, but we all know it was for rugby reasons.
Think about it, sport plays a big part in decision-making.
Yes, it does. You know, and you have to take all the boxes to do all the right things, but at the same time, he went to play Senior Cup Rugby because he wanted to play Senior Cup Rugby, and he did. You know, and like, he's the better for it, to be honest. That's what, you know, rugby was his first love, and it probably still is. But like, and we've other lads in the teams as well that did play Junior Cup, Senior Cup. Michael Madden's young fella is actually in there now as well. And a great promise of young fella as well, you know, not to put any pressure on him either. But like, to be fair, their family are giving a lot to rugby. But long may that continue.
Jesus.
We need them all.
Right, we need them all, absolutely. But you're right, because, you know, if you look at any 9 or 10 year old at the moment, he has all the international games on television, and if he could find a local club to play rugby with, what more do you want, and get started there, like, you know?
Exactly. And you know, we're not one of the clubs either, because we'd be massive in it, all of us would be, but me for sure, that, you know, you have to enjoy it first. Like, the winning and losing is secondary, you know, at any age, but particularly at underage. If you're not enjoying what you're doing, like, I go back to my early days Tom Brasley, Ken Nugent's Day coaxes into rugby by guaranteeing his chips and sausages in the chipper after. But yeah. It worked. Yeah, yeah. We were there.
Well, it's like Katie Gilscarrod. Most kids know, if you ask them, why do you play any sport?
Yeah.
I play with my friends.
Yes.
I enjoy it. I have fun, right?
Exactly.
Winning and losing does not come into it.
No.
It comes in at a certain stage.
We've plenty of time for that.
Yeah, plenty of it. Absolutely, yeah.
But
yeah.
Even, I bring it, like, yeah. I'd say, tis a lot of the reason that I try, or we all try. No, it doesn't always work out, obviously. There's days you lose the rag, but you have to enjoy even at that level. Like, and I see that why a lot of the lads enjoy the rugby in the winter is, I'm not saying, like, the GAA does offer pressure, like, to deliver.
Yeah, there is.
On GAA, like, and
you would take any of the senior teams.
Oh,
sure.
Absolutely.
Like,
yeah. That's, you look at, we were Barmer Hurleys, like, that's the way it is.
Yeah.
And I understand it, but that's why I try and take it a different path for the winter, because you don't want to be listening to a lad roaring from January to December like about why you're not doing this and that and that.
Yeah, yeah,
whereas we
yeah.
try and keep it a bit more upbeat and it is working to a point, but you still have to sometimes, you know, you have to pull the reins at times, but I let them you know.
And I wonder, is it any coincidence, Gerard, that Mount Shannon Celtic are kind of struggling a bit at the soccer? Is there lads played rugby, gone to the rugby, that might have been playing soccer previously or could be playing soccer but they decided to play rugby in the off season?
I don't think so, to be honest.
Yeah.
There's a few winter there, to be fair, but they're like, it's tough though. Anything outside of Ireland is tough, to be fair to them all. Like, lots of clubs like have three teams or four teams and Jeez, I'm looking at this above going, how will I even get a second team?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm talking about pulling players from all those parishes.
Yes, yes.
Like, and, you know, it's difficult, but at the same time, there's a huge need for a second rugby team here. Because we're bringing in lads that are new to the game.
Yeah.
And trying to get them to play at the level that we are at is impossible.
It is, of course,
And it's frightening.
And you want to keep them interested.
You do.
And you need to give them games to do
allow
that.
Allow them to develop to that level.
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
You know, we had two or three lads in this year that joined us, like, that had no rugby experience whatsoever.
Yeah.
And, like, two or three weeks into it, like, they're looking at me going, Jesus, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and you're trying to coax them and keep them going.
Keep,
not protect them, but it is protect them, to be fair.
Yeah.
And, you know, try and get them to develop a little bit.
Yeah.
A second team would kind of allow that because it's not as intense. And,
exactly, yeah. You know, yeah, and all young lads want to do is play matches.
That's all. No, at the end of the day,
exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
And we're not far away from it, but we need to be, you know, we need another 7 or 8 players maybe for that to work.
Yeah.
And that's probably on the cards, to be fair.
Yeah.
So when you have another team, Gerard, you need more management structure around it as well, of course. Yeah.
You do.
Yeah.
Like, and to be fair, is there any offering or are you offering your services? We have we could do it, but we could all play together. But
you would want more medical personnel, both of us.
But no, it is the ambition next year, right, to maybe have a second team that would play probably in the competitions that we had won in back in the day. We'll say that's the ambition, but whether we'll be able to deliver on that now is another story. But we'll try over the summer.
Yeah, like you were saying there, when you get the lads in, I mean, their skill level or their experience level will be very slim, I suppose, and you have to build up that. And I suppose from any perspective, Garrod, how a player protects themselves on the field, what coaching can be done in order how to tackle and how to take a tackle.
Yeah, but to be fair, that's the most important part of it. Yeah. And to be fair, the laws of the game have improved a hell of a lot. Like, we were very worried this year, I'll be honest, at the start, because when they brought the tackle height, dropping it in and other referees were very hot, and it, you know, had to be down chest level or below. Yeah. You know, and that was something that, from a hurling point of view, is what we're talking about, would say is completely different.
Yeah.
Like, when you're meeting the fella for a jostle, you're not down low. So everything your head is telling you run straight, like. But whereas we've had, and to be fair, our discipline for that has improved a lot this year, and throughout the season I'd say we haven't had anything where, you know, in previous years has been a lot worse. So that is improving.
Yeah.
You know, the breakdown, I suppose, is something that could be totally improved on, because you're reliant on referees and kind of interpretation of the game, and you're kind of playing the game, and it's funny the way, be honest, about coaching and how you kind of get for a game and all that. We know the ref before the week before, like, and you're kind of, you nearly change tactics depending on who's
that happens at all levels of rugby.
Yeah.
I mean, I think against the head there, one night they showed different referees' interpretation.
Yeah.
I mean, in the Ireland-New Zealand match.
Yeah.
The Welsh referee penalised Ireland. In the match in Italy, they were doing the same thing.
That's
and it right. And one penalised
the right. Yeah.
And especially Andrew Porter.
Yeah. To be honest, that's so frustrating because, like, it's so frustrating as a coach because, like, which is it? You know, and you can't be playing the game. Like, there's either a lot there or there isn't. What is it? And whatever it is it.
From your perspective, Garrod, as a coach, looking out, what's the standard referee like?
It's not great, no, to be honest. And, but you see, and I fall into this category as well. You were comparing local referees or club referees to referees that have a TMO in a box, two linesmen and a mic, and we're expecting this lad to see everything.
Yeah.
And sure, he's impossible.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to. But the only thing, I suppose, that you would say is that you have, like, the
lads. Good referees and bad referees, I suppose, like every sport.
And I can tell you nearly on the Friday night when another referee whether we're going to win the match.
Because
I know how we play.
And
I know what a referee, this referee is likes that or doesn't like that. And it's very hard, like, for the pros, it's very easy to turn around the Tuesday night and say, we have so and such and so referee in the game Saturday. We need to devise
whatever.
And they work on that for 3 days. I have an hour on a Friday to decide
to
that. You know,
and is the respect code goes all the way down to the local level?
It does.
But the refs compared to the hurling and football, who are led to be abusing referees, like
it does.
For yourself, Garrod, when you get fillers in, like from the hurling background, how do you instill that in the lads?
It's amazing, lads. I'll be honest with you. I can't. There's a couple of lads I'm not going to name them, but like I see them, like, and they're forever John. And the hurling and the rugby, they don't. And I asked one lad in particular, and I live in Emlis. I says, why is it in the hurling you're a disaster? And he is like, and how is it? And he says, sure, this is the 7th time in the rugby.
Yeah.
I always have to be somewhere else because he was playing in the backs in the hurling, he was chucking your men up all the time. But in the rugby, he always has to be moving. But the discipline level in rugby, it's an understanding that's there, and long may it continue, to be honest, because, like, don't get me wrong, I've fired in a few sentences to referees, maybe I shouldn't have myself either, but over the years I've mellowed an awful lot in comparison to when I started. But like, you have to understand, these lens of life as well, and like, they're not there to do you, like, you know, they didn't see it or it's their interpretation of it, and you have to live with it. Like, no referee ever wins or loses a game.
That's true,
you know, in any court.
And just as regards the club in Scariff, would you get emails out from Munster club, from the Munster to say, lads, could you nominate someone to come in and do a referee's course? Is that pressure on you?
Yeah, it is. And in fairness, a few lads have taken it up, in fairness to them. And we have probably three, as far as I know, that have done the courses. One of them is definitely selective.
Right, okay.
And two of them are kind of affiliated, but they can ref you.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
there is that, and there's the same in Killaloe.
Okay.
So there would, I should doubt them, like, and in fairness to the lads, they've no more than the GA boys. Credit to them and credit to y'all for doing it, because
no referees, no games.
Exactly.
And when you're playing any club, is there a referee and two linesmen in all the games, Garrod?
No, just a referee. That's it. And in fairness, he's a lot in his hands. You know, and in by and large, like, you know, there's 10 decisions in every game that people go, but like,
there's 145 other ones.
Exactly. And in the rugby, what way does it work? Is it for the payment of the referee? Do the clubs have to pay each year, like the soccer, or is it a?
It is paid by the branch. It is good. Like, it's funny though, because, you know, it's not funny in one sense, but in our sense it is. When you go down to Kerry or Cork, like, you know, there's nothing easy for the North Boys, and vice versa when they come up to us.
Okay.
Like, when you go down there, you have to really go to win. And the same, vice versa, when you come up here, it's really good as well. Like, there is an element of, you probably get the bit of rub of the brain, the home teams, because sport on the line, or, you know, we'd have a couple, and every club has them, strategically placed along the line, telling them all, asking questions.
Yeah. Well, I know from a friend of mine in Limerick who has taken up refereeing that they are mentored and advised, and they do meet with a senior referee who would have seen them in action and gone through.
Yeah.
You know, so they are trying to get consistent as regards.
I know they are. And what they do is another thing is they actually come out and they actually assist them at matches. And are visibly
there.
And another thing that intrigues me at this level you're playing at, does the ref be vocal like they are at the higher levels? Get away, you're offside, go back, all that. Advising the players.
Yeah. too much for my liking sometimes.
I've got to say that, Gerard. Is there too much of it?
A bit of, like, you know, I have a, this is another thing, it's a pet peeve of mine, I'm probably around too long, but like, if the referee is telling the opposing player no, don't touch it, like, I'm saying, just give us the penalty, like,
you
know, that's hard. But like,
he's actually coaching the players, really, in effect.
Well, my view with that, Gerard, is, and this is across all sports, that at under 12, 14 or 15, the referee can act as a coach, because the guys are allowed on the rules. But when you go up above that, you have coaches to do the coaching, and you're there to do the refereeing, right?
There's probably an element of it, though, is to keep the game moving, fair, and I understand that fully. But, you know, like, the only thing, for me, the only thing they need to shout is ruck. And when the ruck is there, everyone should know no hands. But if you have a referee telling the fella to take his hands off the ball, for me, that's a penalty.
That's struck me already. The referee is telling the fella not to do this. Whereas if he did it, you get a penalty.
It could be to the team's advantage to keep playing as well. Of course. Because it could be, you know, there might have an overlap on the outside.
As a guy's advantage, Gerard, is there a time limit on advantage in rugby?
Not really. We haven't come across it, to be fair. No. I'm sure there is in the rule book somewhere. But
phases and phases can continue.
But they generally, if you're not going anywhere after three or four phases, they generally pull you back. That's generally where it's at.
Or, of course, they say advantage over if you gain a good bit of territory fairly early.
But you'd have to gain a lot, though, to be fair to otherwise, like...
Yeah. And, say, at junior club rugby, would it be more advantageous if you had a good kicker to get a penalty for within certain distance, like, you know?
It's the key to, like, or even just to get actual field position, if you were playing with a Gael and you get a penalty inside your own half, shouldn't be brilliant. Next thing you're down inside the 22 and pressure's on. You know, probably the best rule, I think, that came in the last couple of years, other than the tackle height for safety, is the 50-22, where if you kick inside your own half and bounce it out inside, you keep position. That's very advantageous to a team to have a decent
kicker. Absolutely.
And it just, it keeps the game more exciting as well, to be fair. And that's probably where it was lacking, I suppose, in my day, was the excitement factor, where it was very boring to probably watch it. Whereas now, it is...
I was listening to something on the radio the other day, Gerard, or even at, say, international level, they are looking at more tweaks to make it more flowing, for a better word, or keep it more open.
Shot clocks and lineouts and stuff, I'm not a big fan of them, to be honest. But
The only thing I find times, the TMO at the higher levels anyway, it takes too long to sort out times.
I can't understand it, Pat. We all see it in the television. Right. Jordan Lennon can call it maybe after 2 or 3 seconds. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But you know, the biggest issue that I have with all that crack as well is that, like, the advantage should always be to the team that's actually going to score or attacking. And if there's even the slightest doubt,
To go back to last Sunday,
Scotland.
I was just going to say, we got a try. Was hardly a try. Porter's try wasn't really a try. I thought, and obviously Furlong's could have been given as a try. So it looked like the ref was trying to even it up, or maybe he felt guilty over disallowed Porter or disallowed Furlong's try. But like, when they showed in the slow motion, the boys went in the comment I'm not sure.
Yeah, I know.
But he gave it very quickly. But it has ruined soccer, the TMO.
It has.
So I'd hate to see it. Yeah, it is. It's added on to the time. Now, the great thing about the rugby to highlight is if a team is in position and it doesn't go into touch and the 80 is up, it continues on, which is good. If we're chasing a game, you have a chance to win it, it doesn't blow up, the 80 comes, which is great. And in relation to the actual Gerard, for costs, we'll say involved, like rugby boys, like, are you able to keep track of them, or do you lose them? Or at matches and that, in particular,
there's 60 or 70 quid a pop for any kind of reasonable, and it's hilarious. Like, you'll be seeing the lad kicking it over Lowry's hedge there, and you'll be saying to yourself,
there's
60 quid gone. But like, you'll be sending some lad over to try and get it and pull it out of the ditch. But that's small, you know, there's a lot of cost involved in it, to be fair. But generally, in fairness to the lads, and we have lads for those jobs as well, we're fairly okay on that score.
And then obviously the way matches coach hire and all that, or do lads win their own cars,
we try and keep it to maybe
a minimum.
But at the same time, we've probably done four away strips this year at the same time. Like, there's one thing going down with coming home, that's the challenge.
I can't imagine that.
A lot of the games to be on fierce early.
It is half 2 or 2 o'clock, half 2 is the kind of the main time for us on Sundays. But when you're down in Dingle.
Yeah.
Jeez, you're a long way down.
You're a long way down, yeah, it's a long way home.
It's the lead burning the ear off you from 24
miles. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's good, like, sure, look, we wouldn't be doing it unless...
Yeah, you have the crack.
We kind of enjoy doing it, but...
Yeah.
Some of them days out, I think, they're nearly better than a training session because lads band together, because that's the difficulty you have with... Should we have lads... Even tip lads, even, can you believe it? It's even worse than playing, coming up playing with us. But, and they're part of the group, and it's fantastic. Like, there's a great group there.
Yeah.
And the average, like, to see the likes of Declan Noonan, who would have always classed him, and Henry, as young lads. Sure, they're elder limbs now.
Yeah, elder limbs now. That's right,
And they're still 30 a bit.
Yeah.
But they're actually working married, actually, in the next couple of weeks.
That's right, yeah. So you better be talking nice to them there. Yeah.
Well, they'll have different issues now, anyway.
That's right. And but you go back to your point about the away days. The away days, actually, you know, some clubs would spend money bringing lads away for a weekend, but the away days are your bonding sessions, aren't they?
Yeah, to be fair. And, like, they're expensive enough, like, sure. I know, like, anywhere on the bus now is over £500, like,
to be fair.
And, but to be fair, though, there's a great rugby culture as well in away trips at the home team, and we have that tradition, to be fair, as well, that they're always kind of looked after with a bit of grub after the game. And
well, that transcends rugby, doesn't it?
It does, in fairness to Max above, in fairness, they've always been fierce good to us as regards all that.
Yeah, good buy in there, absolutely, yeah. And just, I mean, Garrod, it is fascinating. Myself and Pat now could keep you here till 10 o'clock. But just as regards your own vision for the club, does the club actually sit down to look at a 5 or 10 year plan, or does it just kind of depends on, kind of how things are going, or would you be looking at strategic kind of aims and things as regards facilities, teams, underage structures, things like that?
Yeah, like the key piece is the piece in the middle that we're dying on, to be honest, is that 16 year old to 20 maybe. Like, if you can get lads to play up to 20s in their own competitions, like the under 20s rugby is probably the best rugby that I've ever watched at any level. It's really fast. You have to be at a high level of intelligence and skill to play the game. And a good few lads now on this team have played that level, which is great, but they didn't play it together. But I was like, if I had a crystal ball and had a lot of money, you'd have a 16s, an 18s, and a 20s team in Scariff, or in Clare even. Yeah. Like, and there's another part of me that kind of says, why couldn't there be a rugby in Clare? Like, it'd be... A lot of people's minds would have to be open to it, but mine is.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Innes, as good and as there, are never going to play AL on their own.
Shannon
either.
Yeah.
Kilrush. There's only four of us.
That's all.
But there's a team playing in Limerick today that are all from Clare. And if you wanted to put Clare lads together... Yeah. Yeah, you could put a team there together, in AL tomorrow. Now, they'd have to come back and win a junior or something else to do it. Yeah. But there is plenty of quality Claremen playing their thread in Limerick. But, like, they're trying to go on a step further. But, of course, the majority of them don't. Like.
Yeah,
that's right.
No, I'm not talking about...
It could be a small handful would go on.
Well, you see, what happens is anyone that's shown a bit of promise or potential, say, like, Munster bring them in, but they could be discarded after a couple of short-term contracts, you know, up along, they won't get a senior contract, and they're just discarded again. They end up going back to club, or they might even get disillusioned and give up rugby. So a very tiny percentage get through.
That's the trouble, disillusionment and giving up is a must.
There's a perception like that, you know, and it's a true perception from them as well, like that if they're not in there, well, they have no chance of getting anywhere.
I don't know him personally, but I know of him, Ikram, that plays football with Clare at the minute. He was going into Munster. And he wouldn't play football then. He was coming to playing bits of football, but he didn't kind of make it in, and he's gone back playing football now. I don't know whether he's even playing rugby or not anymore, but he's on the Clare senior football team now, and he's a fairly decent footballer. But he was hoping to make it at Munster, and I think he got frustrated in the finish, and he was with Shannon rugby as well. But his sister has made the Irish. His sister playing rugby as well.
Yeah.
But like rugby, I think, was his first love, but he's developed now into a decent footballer. He's a regular in the Clare football team.
There has to be a lot. I mean, the percentage of guys who make a goal is so small compared to what goes in brought in and goes through the development, and then, you know, at the end of the day, you're either good enough or you're not. Like, you know?
Yeah.
But even if you're bringing on a step further, like even on a kind of a national level, like there are a few need to kind of get a bit more with it, like and realise that Leinster is only Leinster, like, and that we need to shove it on a bit, because, you know, when you see the signings like that we're after, and a lot of people are giving out about Munster signings that they've announced in the last week, like, I personally think he's a great signing because how do you bring in a guy telling him before he starts he's number two, like, and that's what he's going to be, he's happy to be it for a year. It will give cover for Tony Butler to improve, Hicks to improve. We need to get off this Billy Burns hate trail and back him a little bit. Like, he's a quality player at the end of the day, and he's going to be number two to Crowley, he's not going to be number one.
Gerard, as an expert on the rugby, what went wrong with Joey Carberry?
Look at money, I'd say, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, it's very hard when you're not getting. Like, he doesn't want you number two either.
Okay.
And he knows now that Farrell has decided Crowley is the man.
Crowley's the man, yeah.
Carberry is probably never going to be picked again. Like, France is a chance for him to press a reset and you know, go again. And Munster haven't the money, like, either.
Yeah,
they haven't.
Like, to be honest. Yeah. But this is my point about the likes of you. Like, we're on the back of has been phenomenal success at under 20s as well.
Yeah.
And like, where are those lads playing rugby, like, now?
Yeah, where can they all go?
Filtered around the province. And given game time. You know, it defies logic, honest.
True.
You know, like, they've won back to back, and in fairness, in my opinion, they were Brian Gleeson away from winning a third one. Like, if they had him available, I think we'd have won it.
Yeah.
And that's 320 championships in a row, like, you know.
Yeah.
And but like, that to me, like, that's a nucleus of 30 players. Like, but when are they going to play next year?
We've come so far looking at the French years ago of winning everything under 20s, and we are now that's that right. level. Like, you know?
It's interesting to see where he goes.
And Garrod, the other thing that fascinated me was the rise of Noel McNamara as a rugby coach from O'Callaghan Mills, that's coming from a hurling background, and where he went to.
It's phenomenal.
It's unbelievable.
He came up, you know, what a gentleman he is. He came up to Scarf to do a transition for me. Like, I got through to him from another source.
Yeah.
And, like, he just set up a transition, and I was just there going,
amazing.
He made it look so simple.
Yeah.
And the lads did it.
Yeah.
But he just has a way about him. And I said, that day, I said, this lad is going straight to the top.
Yeah.
Like, he's a quality man, number one, which is the most important part, and the best of the team. He's going to get a big job in Ireland soon, and would deserve it.
There's a lot of good quality coaches in Ireland, like Felix Jones knows with England, obviously, but he'll eventually come home. O'Gara, obviously. Obviously, Murphy, doing the 20 coaches, gone on to Ulster.
Yeah, it is an interesting appointment, to be fair. It's kind of, this is your chance to.
Dave Fletcher to deceive with all the money they've.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
Like, if he can turn it around now, it's a fair.
Yeah, it is.
Mark on his CV because, you know, in fairness, he's had a very successful time with the 20s that's not easy because you don't have them like for a long period of time.
That's right, just as regards rugby players staying involved in coaching, has Johnny Sexton moved away completely, Garrett?
Yeah, there's nothing about it. No, he's out celebrating with Morris.
Yeah.
So I'd say he's not totally moved away.
Yeah, because I thought he'd be a man that might go into some kind of a coaching management structure because of his own psyche. Do you know?
Would he be too critical though?
I mean, he could be. He reminds me of Robert Roy Key.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And Roy Key is a great pundit, but he's a cranky disaster as a manager.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, some you know yourselves that no matter what you're at, even in life, some lads need a rub in the back and other lads need a kick in the
order.
I think.
And the
rub in the back is never going to come for sex.
No. And I reckon probably Peter O'Mahony as well wouldn't give
me that. But he's Munster, so he's different.
Very good. Garrod, we've interrogated you doing. But myself and Pat were absolutely delighted you could come in and join us, because we were conscious of talking about Scariff rugby and rugby in general for a long time, and without kind of your inside knowledge, we were missing a stroke. So we're delighted you came in. While you're here, and I'll take it from Anthony Daly's podcast, have you any fogra? Have you anything coming up that you want to advertise? Any fundraising initiatives? Anything you want to say?
We've the Poker Classic on the 19th, I think, 19th of April.
Okay.
You're in Max and Scariff,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think we're going on a bit of a mystery tour on the 12th of April, if anyone wants to join us. They're more than welcome. Okay. It is a non-hurling weekend, so we're all good there.
Very good.
But and just as I'm here at all, there's an under 16 semi-final for the girls actually on Sunday.
Okay.
In Scariff.
Okay.
Which is fantastic for them. They've done savage work with the girls, Killaloe Belna as well.
Yeah.
We're all in together again. And the under 14 boys are actually away to Dungarvan.
Okay.
Very good.
On Sunday as well. It's great to have the club still involved.
Active, alive, and
competitions and fighting at the business end of the season, which is that's what you want to be asked, isn't it?
Yeah. And what happens, Gerard, I suppose one of the last questions for you, what happens in the off season? Do lads keep...
To be fair, not from Hurl. Like,
yeah.
You know, and some of them probably shouldn't. But
yeah.
But you do.
Yeah.
But it keeps their interest going, and sure...
Yeah. And their fitness levels up a bit anyway.
Ah, but your lads are different now, lads. You know, in comparison to what lads were.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, their gym in morning, noon, and night, is
totally
a different level altogether. And, you know, it is... You know, it's just, they take it easy a bit more, but sure, the hurling boys go straight back into it. And,
yeah.
You know, but to give the hurling guys credit, like, and the hurling in general credit, like, the level of physicality that has changed there has actually helped us in the rugby because they're coming back.
They're in good
a different
shape.
Animal
they're in good shape.
Than they used before.
Yeah.
Before it just take us in at Christmas front to get getting the belt.
Yeah.
Now they're physically demanding the whole time.
That's right.
You know, different level of lads.
But your hurling has changed anyway. There's more rucks and everything now in hurling that has gone very physical.
But there's an awful influx of rugby lads going back into hurling, so I'm available. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. But which is
look,
it's a bit of crack, isn't it?
Great crack, absolutely. Yeah. So, Gerard, listen, thanks very much. We'll just sign off and wish Declan and Henry all the best in their nuptials in the near future. And lads, you'll not disappear. Gerard still has your number, so he'll be looking for you back. From this week's edition of Hoppin' the Ball, we wanted to thank Gerard for coming in, giving us his time. And until the next time, and we might have another member of Garrod's group with us, we've asked Declan Noonan to come in and talk about fitness and all aspects of fitness. So hopefully Declan might be with us in our next edition. So until the next time, slán at.